Fanny Gets Spanked.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Man, oh man, things look bad for mortgage lender Fannie Mae. This morning, Fannie said it lost $2.3 billion last quarter. That's triple what Wall Street expected. The company's down almost $5 billion for the year and says things don't look good for the second half either. Fannie Mae is slashing its dividend from 35 cents a share to 5 cents and says it will cut costs 10% by the end of next year. Seriously, that doesn't sound good enough. Mortgage sibling Freddie Mac is in the same situation. More now from Steve Henn.
Losses continue to mount at Fannie and Freddie, and the big question on everyone's mind is, are we headed toward a government bailout?
Absolutely.
Tom LaMaffa is a mortgage industry economist at Wholesale Access.
I think that the situation is imperiled and the taxpayers are going to be called upon. Whether we call it a nationalization or not of Fannie and Freddie is just more a matter of semantics.
We're not there yet. Freddie Mac has been saying for months it will raise at least $5.5 billion to shore up its books by issuing new stock. But a bleak housing market and Fannie and Freddie's blood-soaked balance sheets have left analysts like LaMaffa skeptical.
I don't think the private sector wants to go near this. I think they're going to let the government work this out and try to unwind this.
If that happened, it would cost taxpayers $25 billion. In Washington, I'm Steve Henn for Marketplace.
Fannie Mae's shares are down 13% this morning. Freddie Mac's have lost another 6%. But so far, some minor gains for Wall Street. The Dow is up 39 points to 11,471. The NASDAQ has put on 15. The S&P 500 is up 4. The Olympics are underway in China, but the stock market doesn't give a rat. The Shanghai index fell 4.5% today to its lowest level since 2006. European shares are down about 1%. High gas prices might be just the thing for train service in this country. Yes, we do have train service in this country. It's a far cry from what Europe has, but more people are trying Amtrak, and that's good and bad. Nancy Marshall Genzer explains.
Last year, nearly 26 million people rode Amtrak. Last month alone, ridership was up almost 14% from July of 2007. The railroad could see a record number of passengers this year, but the trains are getting crowded. Sometimes it's standing room only. Amtrak doesn't have any new cars to add. And then there's the issue of infrastructure. Amtrak says it's safe, but it's antiquated. Trains slow to a crawl through tunnels. In spite of those problems, Amtrak spokeswoman Karina Romero says members of Congress are finally getting on board.
We've seen a lot of people calling, just asking, you know, what do I need to increase service in my state? More and more of them are seeing us as definitely a part of the transportation mix.
Amtrak's asking for more money, about $1.5 billion next year. Congress still has to hammer out the railway's budget. But this is an election year. Romero doesn't expect a final budget before November. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Friday, August 8th on Marketplace.org. The price of oil continued its slide this morning. It's at about $117 a barrel. That's a 20% drop in the past month. But before we get too giddy about it, better listen to a new study out this morning. Stephen Beard has more from London.
Don't be fooled by the recent sharp fall in the price of oil, says Professor Paul Stevens. Long term, it's going to head very much higher. In a study for the British think tank Chatham House, Stevens says the world could face a major oil supply crisis in as little as 5 years. The problem, he says, is underinvestment. Producer countries are starving their state-owned oil companies of cash, and the major international oil companies are too concerned about taking care of their shareholders.
They've been giving a lot of money back to the shareholders in the form of higher dividends and buying back their own shares. And of course, that is money that's going out of the investment pot for the industry.
A major global recession and a collapse in demand for oil would only postpone the supply crunch, says Stevens. He thinks crude prices could hit $200 a barrel within the next decade. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Gas prices are doing such a number on car makers. Today, Toyota will stop producing the Tundra at plants in Texas and Indiana. But that doesn't mean the Tundra is gone for good. Renita Jablonski reports.
The Tundra is a half-ton, full-size pickup with a V8 engine. That's car talk for big and big gas tank.
The all-new, built-in-America Toyota Tundra, the truck that's changing it all.
It's certainly changing Toyota's profitability. Tundra sales are down 15% so far this year. Tom Libby is an automotive analyst with J.D. Power & Associates. He says when production of the truck resumes, it'll be at a slower pace. Consumers may be buying fewer Tundras, but Libby says commercial demand will ultimately keep sales steady.
Contractors need the utility, the bed size, the all-wheel drive, the off-road, et cetera, of large pickups, and there is no substitute.
Toyota says nearly 4,000 full-time employees in Indiana and Texas are affected by the suspension. They'll stay on the job doing training and plant improvements. I'm Renita Jablonski for Marketplace.
Hillary Clinton is in Nevada today, campaigning for Barack Obama. She promised him she would. But Obama said he would help Clinton erase her campaign debt. Dan Gretsch looks at how that's going.
Remember this appeal by Barack Obama on behalf of Hillary Clinton last month?
Senator Clinton still has some debt. There are many supporters of mine here who have not yet given something to help her retire that debt.
At last count, Obama supporters had come up with less than $100,000. Massey Rich with the Center for Responsive Politics explains why it's been a tough sell.
Hillary Clinton is like a furniture store that's having a going out of business sale, but all its merchandise is gone. There's nothing for people to buy.
Clinton owes more than $20 million. More than half of that is money she lent to herself. Then there's this cruel irony for Clinton.
Clinton has almost exactly what she owes that she'd raised toward the general election. The problem is that if those people had already maxed out to her in the primary, she can't touch their money. She has to return it.
Obama just has to hope Clinton isn't thinking about that while she stumps on his behalf. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
When it comes to their stock portfolios, more people seem to be wearing their pessimism goggles. A survey out this morning says 40% of people said their stock holdings would rise in the coming year. That's the lowest percent since the survey began 6 years ago. When we talk about the stock market, we're usually referring to the New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ. But there's a whole other world known as the over-the-counter market. Companies that trade over-the-counter don't meet the standards of a traditional exchange. Maybe you've gotten a spam email about hyping a stock. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. But there is a man trying to bring some order to OTC trading. Amy Scott has that story.
The over-the-counter market has long been known as the Wild West of stocks.
The securities run from very good, strong international companies to the most speculative, the most troubled, the most questionable.
That's Cromwell Coulson. A little over a decade ago, he bought a company that published what are known as the pink sheets. They were a sort of price list for over-the-counter stocks printed on pink paper. Old-fashioned, yes, and rife with fraud because there wasn't much accountability. Coulson took the service online, and he created a system to separate the good stocks from the bad and the ugly ones, like companies touted in stock spam campaigns or suspected of fraud.
It's almost impossible to eradicate this part of the business. What we want to do is slow it down. And the way you slow it down is you separate out the good companies.
At the headquarters of Pink OTC Markets, as the company's now called, everything is pink, from the chairs to the Venetian blinds to the jars full of jelly bellies.
Here's Air France. The market is 2420, 2460.
Last year, Coulson introduced a higher tier of the pink sheets called the OTCQX. It includes U.S. and foreign companies that disclose financial information but may not report to the Securities and Exchange Commission. Mike Molitor teaches securities law at Thomas M. Cooley Law School in Michigan. He says big-name foreign companies like Air France and Roche want access to U.S. investors. They don't want the expense and hassle of reporting to the SEC.
It basically just allows them to have securities traded in the U.S. without having to worry so much about additional U.S. securities law requirements.
For companies that don't qualify for the OTCQX, the pink sheets now offer a sort of rating system. Highest marks to companies with up-to-date information, a skull and crossbones for those with a hint of fraud. Until recently, Stephen Dupre traded pink sheet stocks for a major U.S. bank. Despite these improvements, he says the market is best left to sophisticated investors.
Just for an average investor, I would probably say it's not the best arena. You kind of have to do a little homework.
Cromwell Coulson says he's made it easier for investors to do that homework by shining a little more light on what had been a dark corner of the market. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
If you'd like to take the Marketplace Morning Report with you, I encourage you to check out our podcast. You can find details online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.